All right, Scott, you remember the Skinwalker story you sent me like a year ago that was really long?
I do. Yeah, that was a pretty wild ride.
I think I've finally broken it down to where we can talk Skinwalkers and tell this story on the episode.
Well, it's a good thing because I started recording the episode 40 seconds ago, so it feels like a good time to share it.
I don't have anything else to say about Skinwalkers. You say something. Oh,
sorry for saying Skinwalkers so much. We'll see you on the inside.
You are now entering the realm of the Freaky Deaky, an unsuspecting stop at the crossroads of fantasy and reality, where the frayed edges of make-believe seep into this cookie-cutter, white picket world you've been led to believe is far from extraordinary. What you're about to hear are true stories.
Alleged true stories.
Christian, just... okay? Tales of the strange and inexplicable thought only to exist in film and folklore. Although difficult to accept, we do not know everything about this reality. About time or space, what lies beneath the ocean's depths. And try though we might, the unchanging truth remains. There are some things we legitimately cannot explain logically.
And now that we're back on the inside, thank you for joining us once again here on the Freaky Deaky. We're thrilled to have you. If you haven't yet, check out the new website, thefreakydeaky.com. It has been revamped and looks better than ever. Pick up some merch, leave a story or two, check out the blog if that's up. Hopefully at this point it is. And follow us on social media at Freaky Deaky Pod. Pretty much wherever, unless you're on TikTok, and that's at TFT Paranormal. If you have a story of your own that you'd like to submit, send it into the gang at thefreakydeaky.com or leave us a voicemail at 801-997-0051. We love hearing your stories, and we ask that if you are a new listener, welcome, first of all. If you're a fan of dry humor and nonsensical soundboards and a healthy dose of the paranormal and unexplained, you are in the right spot, friends. And if you don't believe us, wait till the end of the episode. If you dig it, rate it 5 stars. That's all we ask. If you don't dig it, then move on. That's all we ask.
Also rate us 5 stars.
Yeah, that's going to happen. Anyway, with all that being said, Christian, we're talking Skinwalkers today. I know I'm excited. I know at least 8 to 10 of our listeners are excited. And I know the rest of them are shivering because we've been saying Skinwalkers the entire time.
I know. I have to apologize because I think that name is going to come up a lot. So if you're in the vicinity of Skinwalkers, maybe turn down the volume.
But we won't say Yay Naldushi. Oops.
Well, you just said it.
I just did. Yeah. I'll share what's that outside? No, it's fine. Let's get into it.
So the story is originally by Avi Throwaway from Reddit. And the story was told by his Diné friend, whose name is Sam. Sam is full-blooded. Yeah, Sam is full-blooded Diné. I also want to say, if I butcher any names in here or pronunciations.
Yeah, that's kind of our calling card.
Right, I don't do it on purpose.
Yeah, it's inadvertent. So don't just blow us up with hate mail.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sam is full-blooded Diné with his mother and father growing up in the nation near New Mexico. Sam was born out of wedlock, and he was young when his parents separated. The mother moved to Illinois and married. The stepfather was a Catholic, and Sam would grow up in the Chicago suburbs. He would visit his father for a couple weeks a few times a year, but he didn't spend enough time to feel at home. Sam was 20 when he moved with his dad onto the reservation. He wanted a better understanding of his heritage, so he would stay there until he was 24. Lucky for Sam, he met a girl. Friends at first, but this moved on to dating. She was a little older and had spent her life on the res, leaving for university. She became a teacher and moved back to the res.
Are we allowed to say the res? Is that something that people of our complexion are allowed to get away with?
We're telling the story
Okay,
as date. Sam told it.
Hey, so number one, you're telling the story. I'm just sitting here.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm just a bump on a log over here, okay? Don't at me. At Christian.
Yeah.
On the rest.
So she moved back. Her father was John, and he was the medicine man. John was older and needed help around his property. Sam would help often, which probably helped his dating prospects.
Ooh, yeah.
So now on to the juicy stuff. It's popping. Nice legs, bro. Sam didn't look at the skinwalker in the same way as those on the reservation. This tends to happen when one grows up in the suburbs. On the reservation, it was known that the skinwalker was in the same vein as he who must not be named, so it wasn't spoken about. I don't know who that is.
You don't know who he who must
well,
not
I mean,
be?
Well, I mean, I guess...
I was like, didn't we mention that like two episodes ago?
I was thinking of a different thing. Like, he was talking about somebody and just didn't say who he's talking about. I'm like, wait, but no, it's he who... It's Harry Potter.
Harold, at this point, the guy's like 45 years old.
Sam wanted seemed to want to speak about it. He wasn't into the rules on the subject, and the creepypasta stories had fascinated him.
Hey, they get us all.
Yeah. When he brought it up to his girlfriend, Jess, she got upset. She asked him to never speak about it again, especially to her great uncle, John. Sam considered Jess agnostic, so he was surprised by her reaction. When asked, she stuck with being agnostic, but not about this. She knew that the skinwalker was real. She and members of her family had had experiences. Jess told him stories similar to the ones he had heard. Late at night on the res, driving and seeing what you think is a coyote or a sheep following you at the same speed. Yet, when you get closer, it is not either of those animals. It's a human under an animal skin or a half-man coyote kind of creature. This happened when Jess was little. Driving with her father, they saw it. She thought it was a coyote or a sheep, but it was so fast that it kept up with the car. When she looked closer, she thought it was actually a human wearing animal skins. John later came by to do some cleansing protection stuff. It was felt that this worked for a few years. So she left the reservation and went to college. After getting her degree, she came back, and that's when she saw it again. It was running across the rooftops of homes and buildings in town. She thought it was a dog that got on someone's roof.
That happens all the time.
That was until she watched it stand on two legs and leap to another roof. From there, it would sit cross-legged staring down at her with yellow eyes. She raced home, getting pulled over by tribal police. When she explained what she had experienced, the officer shushed her before tearing up the ticket and telling her to get home.
Man, I gotta try that sometime. There's a demon on my tail, sir.
You're going to observation for 48 hours. Get the straitjacket.
That's sad.
So after this again, John performed a ritual. John told her the creature wasn't after her. It had set eyes upon her while on the hunt, and she was extremely careful and never mentioned it again to anyone. She only told Sam to discourage his interest, which would endanger her family. One of the things that John had said to Sam was that skinwalkers could not read minds like the stories that normally go around. It was a tale that would scare kids and keep them from talking about it and drawing its attention to the family of those kids. They also wanted people to forget that they could become a skinwalker if they wanted to. If you don't talk about it, it will lose its power. Sam felt that since the Dene had a long tradition of passing stories, experiences, and legends via oral condition.
That is usually how one passes down legends and stories.
It's just weird because there doesn't really go anywhere. Those who were said to become skinwalkers were in many cases medicine men who in general helped care for their people. But they also practiced what the non-natives might term black magic to harm or scare others.
Yes, of course. Black magic. That sounds oddly racist.
Yeah, it does when you say it.
Yeah.
John told Sam a story about a close friend who was a medicine man in Tuba City. The friend's neighbor was creating a stir when he was building a fence on his property. He was basically pushing his property boundaries, but Sam's friend knew what was going on. After a while, weird things started happening to the neighbor. He had seen a gigantic coyote in the backyard. It would look in the windows at night, scaring the crap out of him and his family. Everyone nearby thought the neighbor was having a mental break when he started hanging out in the backyard with a gun, ready to end the creature. That's about the time the other neighbors started hearing strange and scary noises. He would also stand on 2 feet and look in the windows. Soon the neighbor's girlfriend drove him to the ER because he was tripping hard on skinwalker influence or possession.
My friend is tripping balls.
He was hallucinating and talking about a coyote man that was threatening to kill him.
Well, it is kind of terrifying, so if that was happening to me, I would also share that information with others.
I don't know if I would, because it's skinwalker. You can't share. You just got to suffer.
Oh, well, that doesn't sound fun at all. Never mind.
John came to the hospital to see this man. While others were around, the man laughed it off. The neighbor and those that had seen it were dead serious. Skinwalkers know a lot about hallucinogens and can get results they want without the targets noticing. So he thinks the neighbor sent a skinwalker after him.
I mean, stranger things have happened, for sure. That is definitely not what you want.
Wow. Sam and Jess moved away so that Jess could get her master's. But Sam soon learned John had lung cancer, so he went to visit. Jess, her father, and Sam would help John after the diagnosis. A few months later, Sam gets a call, and it was John. He told me that he had some stuff he wanted to tell me, and that he didn't want to die with him. I assume he felt like he was on his way out based on that. I packed my T2i in case he was cool with me recording him. He says, we spent like an hour or so just talking about whatever came to his mind. It was a lot of stuff I've told you before. Stuff like parts of the res that are cursed, portals to other dimensions, and then stuff like how to bless your home. I'm going to have to look a little bit more into Avi Throwaway because he might have some other stories for us.
Well, it's a throwaway account, so it's
still there.
It's not likely that there's more to it. He probably made that account just for this story.
I don't know. I saw a couple other ones. I just didn't read them.
Perhaps.
Also, he learned some songs and prayers. I had to have on tape because it was in the language, and I'm trash at the language. It was like he was trying to cover everything he felt like he hadn't told me before. He basically said I would be his closest thing to an informal apprentice, as he never actually passed on his knowledge to anyone before. He said he was keeping some knowledge for himself still, but wanted to share what he felt comfy with. After the sun went down, John requested that they turn off the camera and go inside. Once inside, he asked Sam to turn on the TV and raise the volume. He explained that it was important that no one hear their conversation. According to Sam, the old man didn't have any neighbors for miles, so he found that a little odd, at least until he learned what their conversation was about. I haven't been honest with you about Yi Nadalushi.
Nadalushi?
Nadalushi. Yi Nadalushi. Whatever, you say it.
Well, I feel like I did already, but okay.
He then requested that Sam burn some plants, herbs, and a mixture of some sort that he could put on top of the logs.
Go in there, get my paprika. Bring me out some dill weed.
This was so, according to John, no one in this world or the other could hear them. It seems, and this is just Sam's read on the situation, that John thought by writing skinwalkers off as just assholes who dress in animal skins and drug people with peyote or shrooms to fuck with them, he would discourage the young man from ever looking any further into the legends. And while that was definitely true, there were skinwalkers who had no powers, no connection with supernatural, and were just Dene occult fanatics who played dress up. That was only part of the story. So, skinwalker exist in two varieties. The first, John had already explained to Sam, medicine men with no actual supernatural powers, just a very extensive knowledge of various hallucinogenic compounds, able to craft very convincing outfits of animal pelts, and can move and behave very similarly to whatever animal they wish to mimic. These folks were accessible to the general population on the reservation. When I say accessible, of course, I don't mean just anyone can seek them out. It takes someone well-connected, as well as depraved enough to want to seek them out to bother or even harm others. These skinwalkers would often receive monetary compensation for their deeds. Like the hypothesis in John's tuba story, they based their entire practice on the legend of shapeshifters and dark witches in Dene folklore. This explains a good portion of skinwalker stories and lore you see posted online. Large coyotes or sheep behaving oddly, only to, upon closer inspection, reveal that they are a person wearing animal skins. But what about the other stories? The stories of these beings, half man, half beast, pulling off unnatural feats around the reservation, running alongside cars at top speed, mimicking voices, reading, and even controlling minds. Immune to firearms, shape-shifting into incredibly convincing, terrifying, gigantic wolf-like creatures with glowing red or yellow eyes and faces that are neither human nor animal. John theorized that skinwalkers developed sometime around the time when the first settlers arrived. Medicine men in the tribes were incredibly wary of these visitors, and as time went on, they revealed themselves to be conquerors. The medicine men, as Sam put it, turned to the dark side. You know, I feel like it's a Star Wars movie.
It's got a similar vibe.
I was going to use SW instead of saying Skinwalker over and over again, in case somebody's listening in New Mexico. Now we're back on the dark side, so I guess it could work either
way.
There
you go. Yeah, everything works out.
Medicine men back then knew that by turning to the practice of black magic, there wasn't really any turning back. Black magic robs them of humanity and corrupts their souls. But they believed they could do this for the good of their people. And then once the colonizers were driven out, be dealt with by their own people. So according to this, basically, they were going to take on the colonizers and they were willing to be dealt with afterwards, however their people wanted to, as long as they protected their people.
Get those honkies out of here.
In fact, some medicine men revealed their plans for this to other members of their practice who opted not to participate in the rituals. They gave them detailed instructions on how to protect themselves and even to kill them when necessary. Unfortunately, we know how this turned out, and now we have the uniquely Dene problem of skinwalkers. And unlike the other skinwalkers, the pretenders in animal fur, these Yay Nadloshi are not human, or at least not in the sense that is recognized by the Dene. In order to become one of these things, they must participate in a ceremony that essentially robs them of their humanity. And after a long enough time being as one of them, they barely even resemble a human in appearance. Think of the Wendigo in the Algonquin origin, a creature that was once human, but through some horrific twisted process or ritual became something else entirely.
Great reference. Mm-hmm. Very similar, yes.
I would say they might be the same thing, just in different regions and called something different.
Yeah, and you probably catch a lot of shit for that, but I don't think you're too far off.
I mean,
We've talked about that before, there being similarities between some of these, like skinwalkers, Wendigos. What was the other one?
Kushtaka? No. I mean, a Kushtaka has similar traits.
Yeah, I feel like there's a third one, but I can't remember. It's fine.
Wendigo, skinwalker. I feel like there's a third one, too. The practice of being a skinwalker is jealously guarded, even more so than that of the pretenders. It requires committing heinous acts. Murder and or torture of a family member or friend, ingesting poisons and human flesh, and communicating with entities from other dimensions. Skinwalkers are also a people unto themselves, an isolated subculture of the Dene that branched out a long time ago. Although they make their home in the same region as the Dene, they generally do not live among them, fraternize with them, or trade with them. They are a completely separate community, and some would say completely separate species as well. John did not go into great detail on the process of becoming a skinwalker. He said no man who ever calls himself a Dene would ever know such things. That might have been true a century ago when skinwalkers still lived amongst the people, but in this day and age, the skinwalker is much too concerned with being found out, and so they isolate themselves and brought all knowledge with them. Think of those tribes that are still being discovered in the jungles of Africa and South America, completely cut off from the rest of the world. Only this tribe is well aware of the rest of society and chooses to isolate. Being said, of course, they still do go out amongst the people. It's just usually at night, amongst only a small group of folks, and only for their own dark purposes. Exactly what skinwalkers gain from their behavior toward the Dene and occasional tourists is disputed amongst medicine men. John says, or this is what John says at least. John's understanding was that aside from stealing livestock, their abilities feed off the fear they instill in others. Murder also strengthens their connection to whatever dark entities they commune with, but a death directly at the hands of a skinwalker is exceedingly rare. John then went to say how a lot of things that are sometimes attributed to deaths of despair, such as suicide, overdose, alcohol poisoning, etc., could be traced to very powerful skinwalkers. It is said that a basic trait of the skinwalker is being able to instill fear in their victims, like a weak form of mind control. More powerful skinwalkers can actually cause folks to harm themselves. John wasn't sure, however, if the mind control rumors were true. Corpse powder, the favorite weapon of the skinwalker, blown on their victim's face, could actually be how they make these things happen, which is fascinating because this corpse powder, there's an old story and it's a movie called The Serpent and the Rainbow.
Yes, I've heard this.
About basically a true story about zombies.
A rainbow and a snake. Oh.
No, it's about what happens is this pharmaceutical company sends this guy, I believe it's down to Haiti, and it's during when there's a lot of
sorcery afoot.
Problems in Haiti because their leader was a dictator that tortured people. But this guy went down there and supposedly they blew this powder in the face of somebody and they would just like keel over and be dead. And sometimes they would have a funeral and everything, but this person was just turned into a zombie.
Weird.
And supposedly, according to the movie, at the end of the movie, these pharmaceutical companies went down there and got this powder and have been working with it. So who knows? This was...
Well, isn't that great news? What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. And this movie came out, I think, at the end of the 80s or the early 90s. So by now...
By now, we're already ingesting it.
Yep. It's called Viagra.
Wow. No, that brings things to life, Christian, not the other way around.
When you said it like that, I got the... What's her name? I got the voice of Amy Lee from Evanescence in my brain singing
that's
that.
That's unfortunate.
Well, some say corpse powder is a powerful poison that slowly kills over the course of a few days, leaving no trace of itself in one's system. Others insist it's a drug that makes the victim highly suggestible. I've heard of things like this before. Criminals in some parts of South America use something similar to make their marks. Essentially, empty their bank accounts for them.
Might have to get some of this myself.
You and me both. John believes in both explanations. It is sometimes a cocktail of poison and human bone, and sometimes it's a drug that makes one highly suggestible. Here, snort this human bone.
And while you're at it,
rub my large head. One leads to another.
That is usually the case. Human bones and large heads.
Oddly
correlated.
Direct contact with their victims is too risky, both for the individual skinwalker as well as their clan, and is likely frowned upon. When a skinwalker does physically kill someone, the person either disappears or has their corpse found much later, with their death ruled as an animal attack. John says that this is more common amongst weaker skinwalkers. One detail that stood out to Sam was the idea that skinwalkers communicate with entities from other dimensions, and he pressed John on this a bit more. In Sam's words, he knew I was raised Catholic, so he explained them to me as basically being demons. Although the Dene have their own name for them, don't remember what it was, but even if I did, I probably couldn't spell it. They are evil, inhuman spirits that try and come into our realm or dimension or plane or whatever, but don't exactly have a physical presence. So they possess people, or in the case of the skinwalker, they use them as their connection to this world. So some skinwalkers do the bidding of demons, and in return the demons give them powers. But John also said that some really old skinwalkers aren't even people anymore. They're living corpses.
Weird.
But demons live inside them. Guess the idea is that demons give them powers in exchange for letting the demon desecrate their corpse by using it as their flesh puppet after they die.
Well, when you paint such a beautiful picture like that, hey, desecrate my corpse.
Yeah.
Use me as a flesh puppet. Who's not going to sign up for that?
I always heard it called meat puppet, but I guess it's the same thing.
Meat puppet, flesh puppet.
Of course. Yeah. According to John, they communicate with these beings through their knowledge of the portal system in the American Southwest. Didn't expect the portal system to come up, did you?
I encountered a being
in the portal systems of Southwest,
which we've heard about. Anybody that's in this genre has heard about those things that allegedly exist.
It just opens my eyes a little.
Just a little. This included places that are off the reservation, although skinwalkers were wary about going off the reservation as it can be more densely populated and carries with it a risk of being discovered. The few times they do, they are good at keeping a low profile, being actual shapeshifters and all. But due to their nature, they can't resist feeding off the fear of others, so small groups of campers and people driving alone at night off the reservation have stories as well. Sometimes lone visitors outside the reservation but near a portal, who are camping, hiking, what have you, will straight up disappear under weird circumstances. This may be a stretch, but this instantly reminded me of David Pilotti's Missing 411. I highly doubt skinwalkers are to blame for the majority of these mysterious disappearances, of course, because most of them are Bigfoot.
Of course.
They're spread out all around the U.S., and skinwalkers do not venture very far from Dene land. But if what John is saying is true, a few of them could have possibly fallen prey to one. These portals often exist in caves and small canyons and require a lengthy ritual full of incantations, offering, dances, and a sacrifice to open. What the sacrifice is, John isn't sure, but hypothesizes that some of the disappearing hikers may have something to do with it.
Interesting.
Yep. When the portals open, they are used for a variety of things. Communication with the spirits and demons, gaining more power, summoning entities into our world, or even throwing themselves or others into the portals and leaving our world.
Oh man, I love a good portal.
Now, what is the name of that movie with Josh Brolin where he finds that hole, that portal out in the middle of?
That is not a movie. That's a show.
What is it? What's the name of it again?
God, I don't know, but it's the best thing.
It is good. Open Range?
Open Range. Yeah, it's an Amazon show. And that's what it reminds me of. It is a fantastic show.
Great show. Especially if you like this genre.
Yeah.
You should like that show.
It was wild. And then season two is coming, so.
It's going to be awesome. Sam asked why they would go into the portals and what existed beyond them. It was another dimension that allowed them to observe our world, but not interact with it.
Creepy.
As well as see things and beings that couldn't be in our plane.
Encountered a being.
You just like doing that.
I do.
Like that time when I'm at work and I see our tip jar.
That's when you encounter a being.
Yeah, human beings. There's also one of the tip jars said podcast fun.
Nice.
So they look out for us there.
I like that.
He said that they would interact in that dimension with beings called Chindis. I think I'm saying that right.
Never heard that before in my life.
Chindis, which are the evil spirits of the deceased, said to be a manifestation of everything that was bad about a person. See that skinwalker over there? That's Tina.
Classic.
Tiny talking Tina. We didn't like her. She's evil. Now she's a skinwalker.
Oh, that happens. That happens sometimes.
I don't know where that tiny talking Tina came from. The girl that I went to school with in junior high that everybody called Tiny Talking Tina because she was kind of tiny.
And she talked?
A lot.
Hmm.
She was cool, but I don't know where she got that nickname. Rancho Cucamonga Junior High.
Hey, Tina, if you're out there, shut the fuck up, huh?
Yeah.
Every once in a while. Let other people talk.
Scott's words, not mine.
Yeah, it's fine. Just kidding.
They would send Chindis out to not only harm others and spread illness, but also report on which people were growing wise to the skinwalkers. This was where the belief that skinwalkers are not to be discussed comes from. Chindis could listen in on your conversation and report back to the skinwalkers who commune with them, and then using portals, show them where the offending individual lived.
That is really interesting. I've never heard that.
Me neither. That's what I like about this story is there's like a bunch in here that you kind of hear about, but it's very detailed in other places.
And that's why I'm kind of curious to see what people that are actually, because we do have a decent amount of like indigenous folks that listen.
Yeah.
And so that's why we preface this by saying like, hey, we're just sharing information that we found. Like if this is wrong or something like that, let us know. Or if we got just a little bit of information off or something, or you want to clarify something that maybe is confusing to us who doesn't fully grasp the culture, send it into the gang at thefreakydeaky.com. We are always welcome to your insights.
Yeah, I always love hearing these type of things from the viewpoint of the culture.
Exactly.
That experiences them. Because if I'm not going to experience this stuff, I mean,
we hope at some point, but yeah. We hope Christian experiences it.
I'm a skeptic, so the skinwalkers are going to be like, he doesn't even believe in us.
That's true.
Let him go. But that guy with him, do it with the camera, Scott, he believes in everything.
He does. So leave him alone.
It was very important to the skinwalkers that much of the general populace knew precious little about them, their culture, their practices, and most importantly, their identity. Nowadays, of course, because skinwalkers isolate, protecting their identities was not as crucial, as anyone who saw their original forms would never be able to recognize them, as they were not members of the community. But John noted that there were select skinwalkers who would live alongside the communities, and sometimes in them, as a way of feeding off others' energies without directly frightening or stalking them.
Heinous.
He told me a little story about this group of folks who lived near a weird old witch. This was back in the 1980s, I think. She would come into town but never buy anything from the stores or markets or anything like that. Just walk around, stare at people. One day a guy and his wife went into one of the cities off the res for the weekend, and while at the restaurant, saw her looking through a window at them. So they were wondering how the fuck she got there, and it scared the shit out of them. Like she just lived in a Hogan and didn't even have a car. She ended up disappearing. And that night, the wife had a dream that the old lady had gotten down on all fours, turned into a fucking, or turned in cock. but turned into a fucked up looking coyote on their way back to the reservation the next evening. They saw what they thought was a wounded coyote on the side of the road. The husband was going to get out and see what was up, but the wife made him stop. The coyote was looking straight at her with the same stare that she saw in the old woman's eyes. It leapt up on its hind legs and ran off. The next day, the wife told everyone she could that the old lady was a skinwalker. Rumor has it that the old witch got sick and died the next day. The rumor has it. Many people believe that learning and telling others of a skinwalker's identity can spell disaster for them and is one of the few ways an average person can kill them. However, this is only partially true. It weakens the skinwalker by not only robbing them of their prey, they can't feed off the fear of people who know them as just a frail old lady. But it doesn't kill them. What does kill them, however, other skinwalkers. According to John, the woman did not die of a random sudden illness. She simply left town, he believes, to go back to her local skinwalker community. However, the next day she was found not far from her hogan, mauled by a pack of animals.
Oof.
Wolf bites, bear claw marks, even evidence of her being trampled by a horse were found on her corpse. When authorities found the body, a local medicine man, whom John knew, instructed the police to say that she died of an illness. He wanted people to remain unaware that a community of skinwalkers was in their midst, so no curious, stupid folks would go out looking for him.
Cue the curious, stupid folks going out and looking for him.
It's like Bigfoot hunters or ghost hunters, right?
It's like parking your car in certain neighborhoods in the Bronx. You just don't do it.
Fucking Nicolas Cage.
Fucking Nicolas Cage.
So if skinwalkers are, save for a select few, an isolated group, how do they add more to their ranks? They used to be easier to join, like if you were a medicine man and knew how to find them and had completed the first ritual of your own, they'd let you go through the rituals and train you. You have to complete the first ritual before even looking for the skinwalkers so they know you've reached a point of no return.
That is that the murdering a family member thing? Or
John said he didn't actually know the order of the rituals, but he assumed it was part of where you kill a close friend or family member.
Yeah.
So you couldn't really go back to regular society, and you robbed yourself of your humanity too. It's how they know you're for real. Otherwise, they just kill you on the spot. LOL.
This guy didn't kill anyone. Let's kill him.
John told Sam he had no idea how modern skinwalkers recruited. The most likely scenario would probably be kidnapping someone very young and grooming them to murder the family they were taken from, or choosing to share their knowledge with people that Chindis scouted out as a kindred spirit and a potential addition to their ranks. It should be noted that according to John, pretenders almost never became real skinwalkers. No info on why. Sam and I guess that they probably want pretenders to do their thing and continue to exist to throw folks off their trail. Finally, John had one last piece of information to share. Yes, these skinwalkers actually did transform into animals. It was often to varying degrees of success. The more skilled skinwalkers could mimic an animal perfectly to the point where you wouldn't be able to pick them out amongst a pack or a herd. But the problem is, a regular old coyote or sheep isn't scary if it looks and behaves exactly as it should. So skinwalkers purposely transform into imperfect or unnatural creatures. Things such as larger size, weird proportions, even human features mixed in.
Well, that's kind of creepy.
Yeah, a little terrifying. John began noticing that the fire was dying down and it was getting late. And the tiny ship was lost. He told Sam that
you have made that reference so many times and almost exclusively after the words, it was getting late.
It's that was my childhood. I've watched those shows probably for like the first 10 to 15 years of my childhood on repeat. We didn't have HBO back then. He told Sam that he is not to speak a word of what he was told while on the reservation. The only way in which their speech was protected from the prying Chindis was a mixture of in the fireplace, and the myriad of blessings John had performed earlier in the day. The lab television was just there in case anyone, human or skinwalker, was in the area and felt a desire to eavesdrop. He gave Sam a small wooden box filled with the same mixture he threw on the fire, as well as a few other various things that John said would offer protection. He told Sam not to take his possession of these things as a sort of free ticket to talk freely about skinwalkers. However, he said something about how he had many decades of experience in these matters and felt safe. Plus, he was going to die soon, so if a skinwalker took him out of his misery, so be it. Sam didn't have that luck, so he needed to err on the side of caution. Off the reservation, he was free to blab all he wanted about shapeshifters because, as Sam said, who the fuck would believe me anyway?
Exactly. It is a pretty wild story, and I think that's probably why most people don't believe this shit. They're like, that doesn't happen. It's the person in an animal pelt, you moron. And you're like, oh, no. There's so much more to it than that.
Yeah. If true, we in trouble.
It really did be like that.
The next day, as Sam was getting ready to pack up and leave school, he received a call from John. Shouldn't have told you that stuff, he said, and then told him not to come by the property for a few days. He assured Sam that he had everything taken care of and was safe, but wanted to be sure. He hung up before Sam could even get a word in. He let Jess know what her great uncle had said over the phone. And naturally, Jess had to know what it was.
So there she goes, going down to the property.
Yeah. John told her about Sam reluctantly, told her point blank that John had voluntarily given out him more information on the skinwalkers. He did not go into any level of detail of what it was that John said out of respect for the old man's wishes. Jess, according to Sam, went pale. It's so weird seeing your partner, who you know is a big skeptic, get spooked by something like this, but I guess it all tracks. Raised in A, hearing these stories and stuff. Also, just because you're agnostic doesn't mean you don't have some belief in the paranormal. She told me that John probably attracted someone's attention by talking about that shit, but that we have to trust that he knows what he's doing. Then she told me I can't speak a word of what I heard, and I'm never to ask or even allow John to tell me anything anymore. She said something like words have power. You're not culturally Dene, so you wouldn't get it. She laid into me a bit after that. I was kind of insulted, but in retrospect, she was probably right. Hurts to hear, but I think we all got to take a step back. But Jess, alarmed as she was, put her trust in John and told Sam they weren't to contact or visit his property until he said everything was okay. But that day never came. Two nights later, Sam and Jess were awoken by a phone call from Jess's father. John was in the hospital, his health rapidly taking a turn for the worse. The two rushed to the hospital, but John had passed away of a heart attack before they got there. For a while after John's passing, Sam, Jess, and their families lived a pretty uneventful life. Sam thinks it was a period of about 3 or 4 months of relative calm. Jess had started looking into getting an MSW out of state. I'm sure it's some kind of job. And Sam was grappling with the decision whether or not he wanted to stay on the reservation or follow Jess wherever she would go. I asked Sam if there was any tension between him and Jess due to everything that happened, but he said they both sort of dropped the entire argument about Sam messing with skinwalker knowledge. He does not think that Jess attributes what happened to John as a result of bringing skinwalker attention onto him. After these 3 to 4 months of calm were up, strange things began occurring to Jess's family members. Her father, mother, and younger brother all complained of a group of coyotes that ran around their property, keeping them up several nights a week with noises and scratching the side of the house. Her father had taken to standing on the porch with a shotgun some nights, but never saw anything. Her cousin complained about missing livestock. They would completely disappear, but every once in a while, a mutilated corpse of a cow would be found a few yards from the property. Sometimes it was a cow who'd gone missing days earlier and looked only freshly slaughtered. Then one night, Sam was staying over at Jess's house. While they were having dinner, Sam noticed that it had gotten oddly quiet outside. He told me that it was a particularly windy evening, but suddenly no howling of wind could be heard. That's when he heard something tapping on the window. Jess pointed at the window behind Sam. When he turned around to look, he caught a glimpse of a figure for only a split second before it vanished. But he could hear it walking away from the window, as the thing was very close to the house. The two were frozen in fear for a few seconds before the howling of the wind returned. They drew the blinds. Sam said they barely slept that night. Jess told him that she saw a large wolf with glowing yellow eyes looking in their window.
That was a little demonic.
Just a little. She says that it had a weird anthropomorphic vibe and that it was smiling like how a man smiles.
Yeah, no thanks. No thanks on that.
Mm-mm. There was a row of yellow teeth that looked oddly like human teeth. Jess found herself in the coming days triggered by this. She told Sam it reminded her all too well of the two beings she saw all those years ago. They had someone come by the property to bless it, and that was that for everything that had transpired at Jess's home. A few weeks after the incident, Sam was awoken by a series of howls. The howls, he said, started far away, but were loud enough to jolt him awake. They grew in volume as they grew closer. Sam estimates they were about a minute or so in between, each howl getting closer. From far away, they sounded like your typical wolf or dog howl, but as they got closer, they sounded more bizarre. As he said it, it's really hard to say exactly why these noises were so frightening. I don't know, bizarre. Like I was shivering in fear. I've never felt that way. Wave after wave after wave of chills duped. My eyes were watering. I felt like I was having a panic episode. They didn't sound like any animals I knew. It started like a wolf howl, but then made weird gurgling noises that went on for a few more seconds after that. The howls were really loud at the front end, violent, like they were warning. Suddenly, Sam heard a howl from inside his own home. He tells me he grabbed a pistol from the closet, nearly shot himself fumbling with it, and burst through his bedroom door only to see an empty house with the front and back doors wide open, swaying in the wind. Looking at the back door, he saw two wolves running away in the moonlight, but their gait was off, as though they were on the wrong set of hind legs. The next day, Sam dialed the medicine man who blessed Jesse's place. He was an old friend of John's. When he came by, he first listened to Sam's story and then inspected the home. The medicine man, in a sort of roundabout way, told him he was indeed a skinwalker and that he'd caught the attention of something very old, very powerful, and very evil. In fact, the medicine man had never heard of any being of the sort actually entering another person's dwelling. That fact alone terrified the man enough to where he said he was just like, I don't know what my blessing will do. Best case scenario, it'll keep it off your property. It won't keep it off you. Worst case scenario, it'll make it mad. I thought, shit, well, it was worth it just to try for the possibility of it working, I guess. Sam also showed the man the box of items that John had given him to see if it held any significance. The man frowned, saying he didn't wish to speak ill of the dead, but John had made a small error in giving Sam what he thought were things that would protect him. The man went to his truck and came back with another item. I should note, Sam won't tell me what the items were. This is out of secrecy, respect for certain Diné traditions. He also says that he didn't even know what half the stuff was. He told Sam to put that with the others, but that it was no guarantee. There is no one-size-fits-all solutions warding off dark wishes.
He didn't tell me what he gave him, but Sam was suddenly wearing a puka shell necklace.
And saying, hey, brah.
Yeah, surf's up, my guy.
He said there was no one-size-fits-all solution to warding off dark witches. Witches, which, by the way, is how he refers to skinwalkers, are very superstitious, but some more than others. A supreme being. Finally, he performed the blessing. He told Sam that if things don't improve, he may need to seek help from someone else or multiple others, and then gave him info of some other medicine men whom he trusted. Here's a pamphlet to Roger down the road. He's been doing this 5 years longer than me. He closed out by saying that John was probably the best person he knew to deal with these things in spite of the slip-up on the items he gave Sam. And lamented his passing. That night, Sam said he slept soundly, which continued for about a week. Then one night, Sam woke up to use the bathroom. He didn't switch on any lights, but noticed two very disconcerting things. For one, it was freezing. We live in the desert, but it's never been that cold at night that time of year. And I didn't have an AC on because I'm not a diva like you.
Wow.
It also fucking reeked.
Cool. Well, I feel both insulted and informed, so yeah. Thank you.
His house smelled of rotting flesh. After relieving himself, he went back to bed and then had an incredibly vivid dream. Six tall, lanky, ashen-skinned men in animal pelts wearing skulls with bits of flesh still clinging to them. He remembers them clear as day. Two appeared to be dressed as wolves, one as a sheep, one as a coyote, and another as a deer with broken antlers. They were standing around, all glaring at him with striking yellow eyes. They barely moved, like living statues. They looked like people who hadn't eaten in weeks, almost zero body fat or muscle, and one of them did not look well. The deer man, I'm talking about, gray skin infections, oozing almost like a zombie. It was disgusting. Sam woke up in a cold sweat. He told me that in the dream, he was just standing there as their eyes bore into him. He actually knew he was dreaming while it was happening. His first and so far only instance of lucid dreaming. He told me how desperately he wanted to wake up, but couldn't. When he left his room, he saw 5 sets of footprints in the dirt, and there were no footprints leading to where they actually were, just 5 sets of footprints, as though something had just appeared and disappeared in one spot out of thin air. There were also 6 men in his dream, but he never found the other set of footprints, assuming that these prints belonged to the men in his dream. When he told the medicine man about this, he was rightfully baffled and terrified. He told Sam to call the others, but he doubted the efficacy of their practices in light of the information he just shared. He still offered a blessing, which Sam accepted. Sam did indeed make a few calls and told several other medicine men about what had happened. They told him that something dark had set its eyes on him and that he was to be very cautious. He basically lived with Jess until the semester ended, only going home to grab something every once in a while. Sam moved back to Chicago area for a brief period before Jess started her first semester for her MSW in another city where he joined her. That's around the time we met on a gig while he was working as a freelance photographer. Whether or not he left exactly because of the encounters and the dream, he has not really said. I know he was looking to live in a city with a vibrant arts community, but I do think the encounters were the straw that broke the camel's back. Sam says that he is often hesitant to return to the reservation, but he still goes every now and then to see his dad. I'm sure the Skinwalkers miss him greatly.
Man, what a long story, but like, I was sitting here as you're going, I'm like, man, what could we title this? Like, Deathbed Skinwalker Confession? I don't know, something.
Yeah, it's going to be...
It's a wild
It's not
ride,
really a
man.
Deathbed confession, but the...
But he died.
Something like that. Yeah, it's got to be something like
and
that.
And the whole reason he shared the information was because he was dying, right?
Right.
And he didn't really have a predecessor or anyone to pass down that knowledge. That's can you imagine even just having someone like that in your life be like, hey, so I'm coming to an end here. There's some things you need to know. Man, our culture, at least mine, definitely not like that. We bottle things up and then on the deathbed, you're just like, do better than me. And then you're gone.
Yeah. That's similar to my culture. Mine's probably even a little worse than that because Generation X, we got problems.
Yep. That does happen, it turns out.
It's called being left at home.
Yeah. I forgot I don't even think I read that whole story all the way through. I remember coming across it and sending it to you being like, we need to make an episode out of this because this sounds really fascinating. And I haven't really heard too much information that was shared in that story. You know, like we kind of mentioned earlier, you know, we've heard bits and pieces of things, but you never really get the scoop, you know, it's right. Always like, just don't mention it. Don't talk about it, whatever. But there's a lot of stuff in there.
That story had a lot of stuff. It's probably the single best story I've seen that I can think of on Reddit because it's so detailed, so long, I cut some of it out.
Yeah. And it was still like, for the most part, I was like, I wonder if people are even going to remember that I'm here. I told you at the beginning, I'm like, I know this is a long story. I won't interject as much. Damn. Yeah. I pretty much just kicked my feet up and was like, all right, here we go. Let's get into it.
Yeah. And I've thought about how to put that story together for a long time. And I'm like, I think we can just read it. It's a good story. It's very detailed.
Yeah. Cause we talked about doing like a YouTube thing, but can you imagine how that's a long ass story to put on YouTube, man?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Me trying to read the whole time.
Surprisingly, for as much text was there, that's probably the best you've read a story. Like, you know, you slip up a lot on like smaller weird things, but for whatever reason on that one, there was only a few instances where you got tongue tied, but
some of that is just like getting over a cold. My voice, it just comes and goes at times.
Yeah, kind of like Karma Chameleon.
The SW put its eyes on me and I got sick a week ago today. When we were recording.
That is true.
I left the podcast studio, felt a scratch in my throat, and
then you
had
died.
A horrible weekend. Missed a day of work.
And we're about to do the exact same situation as last week, too, where I'm leaving you with my son while I take my mom to the store.
And then I'm going to go to work later tonight.
And you're going to text me and be like, it happened again. Now, you just need to get yourself a bottle of sanitizer, Christian. You deal with a lot of human beings.
We have sanitizer. I use it all the time.
Well, you don't use it enough.
And I even sniff it.
You inhale? Okay, that might be where you're getting sick.
It wakes you up a little bit if it's got
a
good lemony voice scent.
Now it's talking to him, everyone. We've got problems.
That's a little
here.
I inhaled a little bit too much.
Yeah, that was not sanitizer. You were snorting, but it's fine. What a crazy story. I'm interested to see what people think about this one. I know a lot of people are going to enjoy it. It's a very entertaining story, but I'm more interested in folks that are, you know, the natives that listen and the people that are very familiar with these types of like this type of lore and stuff like that. If the accuracy is there, if they're listening to this and they're like, wow, it's actually pretty spot on. Or if they're like, no, this is all horse shit. Like,
let us know.
Yeah, seriously. Like, let us know. Comment or send in. If you don't want to be public on a comment or something like that, just send us an email and yeah. We'll be in touch. That's a wild ride. Let us know what you think of the story. Let us know. Very curious.
I had a lot of fun with just reading it.
Yeah, so. It's a wild ride. And we got to do more like that. Like, we got to find long stories on certain subjects because the Skinwalkers, obviously, hot topic. Everyone loves talking about them, even though you're not supposed to. That's probably why they love it as much. But yeah, we should see if we could find some more or like some really like detailed stories on some of the other cryptids or lore out there about, you know, even the fuck, even haunted houses or something like that. Like,
yeah, if you guys are out there, don't have a story of your own, but come across a story like this that you want us to see, send it to us. Well, we can always talk about a story you found. And some of the, depending on where you're at, sometimes you find local stories that we may not hear about up here in Alaska.
Yeah, send us your loco stories. Yeah, that's all beside the point. Since we are kind of on a time crunch, this will likely be somewhat shorter because we gotta head out. I gotta take my mom to the store and then I gotta get back and put my son down for a nap, and that's all stuff that you don't care about. So we are gonna see you right back here next week on the Freaky Deaky. But in the meantime, check out the website. Go to thefreakydeaky.com/beans, draw weird pictures on Christian, take a screenshot of them, and then tag us on Instagram. And who knows, maybe I'll pick a favorite one and I'll send you a little something, you know what I mean? Join the Facebook group. Good conversations to be had in there. It's always a good time. And yeah, we're all about the good times. So Christian, thank you for the story. We hope that everyone enjoyed it, and we will see you right back here next week for something else that you're gonna really enjoy. But in the meantime, you got to, well, just play this again. Goodbye.